something that's indestructible, which it turned out it wasn't. With a big hammer, you can't do anything. Everybody did that and bent some bolts. But basically, it was just something that make it easy to get to. And that's why I put it out the park I put it out in. It wasn't a scenic area, but it seems like most people, and maybe that's fair, is if they do a long hike, they want to be pretty sure they'll find the cache. The whole idea is just to get them to a nice spot or take a walk, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and the cache should be relatively easy to find. Whereas if you got to walk several miles or something and then rack your brain to try to find the cache, that kind of takes out a lot mm-hmm. of the fun. Actually, Dan got me the steel from work, and then I cut it and welded it. I had the idea of what I wanted to do. It all worked good until they beat around on it, and the bolts, I even hardened the bolts, and they were somehow able to get those bent far enough that they wouldn't slide in and out anymore.
So they tried to get into it, and they didn't.
You know, when I went and picked it up, it's amazing the obvious trail that leads you right to the cache, you know. Yeah. So I actually moved it a little bit, a couple hundred feet, and now it's mm-hmm. even closer to the car, but there's no trails. There's no reason kids would even be there. It's still chained to a tree and everything. Mm-hmm. That probably makes them want it more because they think it's something worth something.
What about finds? Almost 5,000 caches.
So when we were in Clarksville with Nani Poppy and them, I said something about caching and stuff, and he said, you know, it's not as much fun as it used to be. Like, we went to Woodstock, and we did whatever, 110 or 20 or whatever it was that day. He says, I can't remember one thing about any one of those caches. It's just the numbers. It wasn't fun. Yeah, it was fun getting 100 finds in a day, but I can't say, oh, I remember this cache. This was good because. And I can relate to that. I think everybody can. It goes on a trip that just for numbers, the park and grab. That was kind of unique about Clarksville because it's not a scenic area, but all their caches down there are very unique. I did one down there, which I think was the most fun cache I've ever done. They can get away with that down there because they kind of like own the city, where we can't do that here. We don't have that. And the thing was, there's an abandoned school. They've got these dusted on lights placed around the thing, even though the school's closed. It's a telephone pole. It's got a power box on there, and then it's got way at the top the dusted on light. Well, the city has gone in and replaced all the dusted on lights with the fluorescent lights now for the energy saving thing. Because that was kind of off the beaten path where nobody should be back there anyhow, they let that go. What he did, he goes out there and removes the light and the dusted on thing. On the box on the pole where the power switch is, he mounted a fishing reel, and he's got conduit that runs up to the post, makes the curve into the light, and this fishing line runs up into there, into the cover for the dusted on light. There's a lock on the thing. Once you get in there, you turn the fishing thing, and this whole dusted on light drops down, and the cache is right there. And I thought, that's a neat cache. Things like that we can't do here. I guess, like Charlotte said, some of the most memorable caches are not so much the caches, the locations. Mm. We've done some fantastic waterfalls that maybe a mile or so off the road, but you don't know about them. Some of the history. I've always liked virtuals. And we went into Kansas City and did the picnic 2 years ago. There's a lot of virtuals in Kansas City. Some of those were very interesting to read about. I always remember we went to the one at Union Station down here where Dillinger was brought in by the train to send him to prison. The FBI agents were there, and apparently when he got off the train, Dillinger's men or whoever it was shot all the FBI agents. Mm-hmm. Up to that point, FBI agents weren't allowed to carry guns. After that happened, that's when they changed the law to have them carry guns. I remember my first cache, just like everybody else, which was blood cache. One of our trips, we went up to covered bridge caches up in Indiana, 20 or 25 covered bridges. Basically, every one of them had a cache by it.
He's gotten our daughter into it.
I gave her my old legend. Her and her boyfriend tried caching. They found one at Larimar, I think. So you got to start, you know.
Charlotte, you were actually involved in MOGA. You were on staff, and Rich was participating.
Always, yeah.
And there was no conflict of interest there. Charlotte, you weren't passing him.
No, because
no such luck.
Because I didn't go to any of the staff meetings. All I did is show up the day of MOGA.
5 or 10 people that had been on staff every year.
I've been on every year.
4, maybe 5, something like that, that have been there every year.
This year, when I got there, they put me in the store to sell the things.
Yeah, they wouldn't trust her with waypoints.
I couldn't remember them anyhow.
This is the first time to compete, which it was just different to see it from the other side.
And your competition was who?
Nobody. We were the only only senior group.
And you still lost, no?
Yeah, right.
They were called the Silverbacks.
Originally, it was the old geezers, and Dan said that didn't sound good. Everybody else is 56 or 7, except for me, so they were the young guys. It was good. They're already talking about competing again next year. I got to think twice, I don't know, because it's definitely hard on you.
Friday, before MOGA, the team met up there in the park. They just wanted to see what kind of terrain they were going to have to fight. Well, I mean, you didn't break any rules.
Well, apparently there was.
You couldn't go and use the park.
Competition is not allowed on the course. We don't even know where the course is. We weren't allowed on the course before the event, and we got chewed out.
Well, but if you don't know where the course is, right, how do you know if you're on it?
So we get out there, and we get back, and they're all yelling at us. Says, what are you doing out there on the course? And he said, well, we're just out here walking it. It says, you can't be there. It says in the manual. So we got back to the motel that night, and everybody read the manual, and it doesn't say anywhere that we're not allowed on there. And I told Mike, I said, it is not in there. And he says, well, it's been there since day one. And I said, well, you better reread it because it's not. Nowhere does it say that.
Richard says, well, we'll be gone about an hour, 2 hours. Okay, you're going to be gone. I'll leave you the keys. He forgot to leave me the keys. My purse is in the car. Everything is locked up in the car. I have nothing.
Staff was upset. She was upset.
The gates got locked at 5 o'clock, either 5 or 10 minutes to 5. So I've been sitting there 4 hours waiting for them to come up.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.